Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
In peace. We are within 30 days until Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Register today at www.summitofthemoors.com. www.summitofthemoors.com. This is free, a continuation from the January Summit, where economic security is our forefront, our topic, our application, and execution. Be there August 16th through the 18th at www.summitofthemoors.com.
It's now official, Moors. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package. Right there, waiting on you. Okay, now, this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country. And is operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages, now officially available.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and tonight we'll be dealing with money, lawyers, Freemasonry, and slavery. What historical facts govern the money we use today? What and how should lawyers handle their clients and their cases? What is the secret of Freemasonry? Now, we only have three questions asked. However, we're going to lay this whole thing out from the beginning to the end. So I'm going to need y'all to hold your hat. We're just dealing with part one today. We're going to deal with the code to commerce. We're going to lay this thing down because we got a lot of new people here on the broadcast. There are new people who will be listening to the broadcast after the broadcast is over today. So we're going to have to bring them up to speed. For those of you who are already familiar with this information, you're going to hear some new stuff this evening. But at the same time, you're going to hear connected to that something that you may have heard before. But it doesn't matter, because what we're trying to do is make sure this information is available. Everybody got it, so you already know what's going on inside the United States of America. We are offering our free articles this evening: The Commerce Game and How to Play, Secrets of America, The 14th Amendment Exposed, The Moors, United States Bankruptcy and Moors, and the common law grand jury set up, put out by the Supreme Court has already voted on it in the month of May this year. So now you have to understand the power that's available to you. I'm trying to get you to understand it so you can go ahead and get this thing on. Now, for those of you who are new, on Wednesday night we teach contract law right there on the awakening for the Moorish American government on Blog Talk Radio. No conference call, right there on Blog Talk Radio, the awakening. Y'all excuse me. So make sure, if you're on Facebook, send your friend request. I can open it up. You can get right there on my wall and listen to that broadcast that we did Wednesday night, because we're finna do some things involving your birth certificate. So send a friend request to Tahaka Amana L. Bay right there on Facebook. Those of you who are on your social sites, go ahead and send me a friend request. I will grant that friend request. That'll give you access to the information that we're putting out on a regular basis. Okay? Now, they keep me banned on Facebook because somebody over there does not like the information I'm putting out. And if they don't, no, they're not going to like what we're going to reveal tonight, because we don't. So we just have to tell the truth. We're going to put this thing out. The nitty-gritty has to come out. Okay? It has to come out. After the first hour of this broadcast, I'm going to ask you all, if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I will recognize your hand, open up the phone line, and you can let us know how you feel about it. Now, we will be coming back with part two of this broadcast, but tonight we're going to try to get as much in and do as much damage as we possibly can, revealing to you about the money, the lawyers, Freemasonry, and slavery in one broadcast. Okay? Now, we're going to start with some plugs here this evening, and we're going to start with the underlying factors of what's going on, because if you can get this clearly understood, if you can get this in your mind, you will know what's going on in America, if you can understand this, along with the articles and stuff that I give for those who request them. Now, for those of you who are requesting these articles, send that request to tahaka53@hotmail.com. All you got to do is say, Tahaka, send them a free article. You ain't even got to say good morning. And I will send them straight to you as an email attachment. For the solution to what's going to be discussed this evening, go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. If we're dealing with mortgages, it's there. If get rid of it. If we're dealing with student loans, we're getting rid of that. Tabulate contracts or credit cards, we're getting rid of that. If you got child support, we're getting rid of that. Internal Revenue Service, boom, getting rid of that too. All that's right there for you. And it comes along with Tahaka's Archives. And on top of that, we back in it up. So you can call me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll get you in there, show you around, show you where your document's at, fill in the blank, send it to us, let us look at it, make sure you got all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted. Then we go to the next phase. It's just that simple. Ain't nothing complicated about this. It's all do it yourself. Okay? But now we're finna ride tonight, and we're gonna get this here thing out here tonight. We're gonna start with cracking the code. Hold on.
The subject matter we're dealing with is so incredibly large and laborious. It's huge and humongous, but that's what the masters of this world have. That's the way they operate, on a huge and magnificent level. They manipulate and exploit everything. And, it's very difficult to find a place to start when you want to explain how cleverly put together this system that we live under is. We talk about a judicial system and an educational system and a system of government. The word system comes, it's a Latin word. For in Rome, in the ancient Roman Empire, the word system was a term used for the sewer. We still call it today a sewer system. Consequently, all the systems that we have today are in the sewer. It has, it's filled with lies and deception and manipulation. and God knows that it's a huge subject. The words that they're used in religion and institutions of government. Words are very important. When we talk about law, noble, where do you get the word noble? It comes from nob illi. Illis in the Latin was a word and a term in the ancient Latin for the gods. The gods were the illis. It's based on the old Sumerian word illu, I-L-U or I-L-L-U. Illu or illi was the gods. And in Latin, the word nob was a high. Was anything high was nob. That's where we, people who act like they're high, are called snob, because the word is nob. When you put nob illy, it's the high gods. Gives us our word nobility. Nobility comes from nob illy. And when you talk about the nob illies or the noble ones, they are the ones who are referred to in the old European system as the authorities. They are the authors. They author, they write down and author the law, so they are the authors or the authorities. So when you hear terms like the authorities are saying this and the authorities, my question has always been, who are these authorities who have written the law? And then you come to find out that most of our laws are based on canon law, church law. For almost 2,000 years, well over 2,000 years actually, Europe has dominated the whole world. And the Pope has dominated Europe. What you need to understand about the church is that there are two entities in one institution. The church, the Catholic Church in particular, is both a religious institution and a political one. But its real strength lies in the fact that it is a political institution. It is based on the raw use of power and the manipulation of governments, kings, rulers. And when you get into the church history, it's phenomenally interesting about how the mafia is connected to the Vatican, occultism on its very highest levels. The CIA was a Catholic institution in point of fact, because the five men who actually founded the CIA were members of orders within the Catholic Church. I don't know if you know this or not, but when Adolf Hitler finally concluded that they were, and the German Nazi high command finally figured out that they were going to lose the war, and there was no doubt about it, they decided they needed to get out of town. Anyone would. And so consequently, the Russians in particular wanted to make darn sure that they didn't get out of town. And so the way the Nazi high command and the real authorities got out was through the Vatican. The Vatican provided Nazi passports for all of the high command to get out. And that was called a Vatican rat line, R-A-T-L-I-N-E. You can go back in the dictionary and look it up, rat line. It was the Vatican providing safe passage and money and new identification to all the high command of the Nazi party, and many of them were sent to Central America, South America, and the real cream of the crop was sent to Washington, D.C. And they were. I mean, NASA. NASA is an interesting word. National Aeronautics and Space Administration comes from NASA, N-A-Z-A, NASA. And NASA goes back to Nazarene, the Nazarenes. And when you get Nazarene, NASA, Nazi, and in the Nazarene cult, I mean, I always start in one corner and just work out because there's so much to talk about. But when you get into the Nazarenes, we're told that Jesus was from Nazareth. Well, in point of fact, there was no Nazareth until the 4th century. And so Jesus would have been dead for 350 years before Nazareth even existed. But there was a priesthood called Nazarites, and it was spelled N-A-Z-A-R-I-T-E. If you look it up in a Webster's Dictionary, look up Nazarite, N-A-Z-A-R-I-T-E. It will tell you in a Germanic spelling and Anglo-Saxon spelling, it's N-A-Z-I hyphen R-I-T-E, Nazirite. And consequently, the point being is that the Nazis were financed by international banking out of London, out of New York, Morgan Guaranty Trust, Chase Manhattan Bank, Manhattan Bank, Chase Bank, which became Chase Manhattan, Morgan Guaranty Trust, as I said, Citicorp out of Chicago, Bank of America, which was called the Bank of Italy. All of our major banks in this country helped organize and finance Adolf Hitler. And consequently, when you start looking at how the church was involved through Cardinal Spellman to promote Nazism, fascism around the world, it's just an exciting and incredible story of betrayal on the highest levels. But my interest in all of this has been the use of words. Words and terms are fascinating. Concepts have come out of the Middle Ages. Ideas are expressed in symbols. And I'll give you some examples. Why do you have to go to court? The concept now, I'm not giving you a nuts and bolts footnoted explanation. I'm giving you a general overall concept. Why do you have to go to court? You go to court because you play basketball and tennis on a court. The whole idea in court is put the ball back in the other guy's court. So you get this, quote, team that throws the ball back over there, and they've got to pick up the ball and throw it back the other way. And so it's a game. It's playing on the court. How do you play tennis on a court? You play with a racket. Why? Because the whole thing is a racket. This is where we get the word. And the people who run the court system are the same people who gave you your judicial system, they've given you your religious systems, your educational systems. The entire superstructure of Western civilization is a racket. The entire thing is based on the manipulation and exploitation of the ignorance of the people. Let me read you something out of the Catholic Encyclopedia. Under Roman law, two sentences, incredible sentences. Under Roman law, Catholic Encyclopedia.
In fact, financial war. Who are the enemies? Well, a lot of people, they have problems with the IRS, problems with the cops, with the court system. People, they lose when they go to the courts. However, the real problem, it's not the IRS agents, it's not the real people who are dealing with you behind the corporate entities, but the people himself. For example, if you receive a correspondence from an IRS agent, it's not the IRS that your problem with. It's the person who's sending you that letter. So you have to make sure that what's going to be your target. For a change, this book is not about anti-government. Instead, this book is about knowing all the codes, all the laws, so that you don't violate them. This is very important. So we want to make sure that we understand the codes so that we can basically use the codes for our own benefit. Now, the last 60 years, there is a new law in town, and it's called UCC. UCC is Uniform Commercial Code, and it's the code of commerce. Now, everyone is involved in commerce. if you're living in a society, you are involved in understanding with each other. So basically, if you're going to be living in a society, there are some certain codes that you're going to have to follow. People, they tell us, they call us, and they say basically that they don't want to be involved in Social Security, they don't want to be involved in driver's license, they don't believe in driver's license, they don't believe in IRS. However, everyone should realize that if you are in a society and there is an understanding, then if you accept Federal Reserve notes for your labor, if you want to drive and you register your car, all these are contracts. And contracts make the law. Yes, you're sovereign. However, you surrender some of your sovereignty when you get involved in contracts. Now, what are those contracts? All those contracts are coded. Coded means there are a certain understanding between people that we agreed upon by contract. And after getting involved voluntarily, we cannot just say, well, it doesn't apply to us, or we're not going to go for it. So people, they get involved in a lot of trouble by saying that, well, I have constitutional rights. You go to the court and the judge says, not in my court. Constitution is not in my court. And you just think about it. Constitution is not in my court. I thought that this country has a constitution. I thought that all the government employees, they're under the constitution. So how come this judge acting as a god and telling me that not in my court? Well, there is a problem. Are they violating any law? No, they're not. They're not, because there are some certain contracts that you agreed upon, and basically it waives your rights for constitutional rights, and also it waives your Bill of Rights. The court system basically is like a private club. It has nothing to do with United States government. It has to do with a franchise to the English bar. They have their representatives, which is basically the attorneys. And these attorneys, of course, they have a permission from the bar to practice law. Now, if you start practicing law, they will put you in jail probably. And the reason why, it's not because you cannot talk about the law, it's because all these codes, it's been copyrighted by a Canadian company, which is a British company, for us. So if anything is copyrighted, the copyright law kicks in. And if you use the copyrighted material, you are in violation of the codes. Attorneys, they have permission to use the laws. They pay the franchise fees. You don't. You have to pass the Bar Association exam, and you have to get their authorization to use the codes. So if anyone is going to enter in a contract with you, you have to understand that they cannot do it in force. It needs to be with your agreement. So anytime that you do business with someone, meaning of the minds is very important. Both parties need to agree upon the contract. The reason why I'm saying this, because no one can put a gun in your head and force you to sign anything. The court system is the same way. It's a private arena. So they cannot force you to go to the court unless someone files a complaint and someone gives their rights to the court, and the court will act on behalf of the person. However, the court is a third entity. It's not the main person to come after you, even though you think so. So just understanding this, you should realize that if you get a summons, which we're going to, of course, cover it at the end of the day, if you get a summons, it's basically an invitation. And they need to have your agreement so that you can go to the court, and you're going to have to submit yourself, and you have to allow the court to basically talk to you, prosecute you, or whatever. But they need your agreement. That's the reason why when you go to the court, the judge will ask your name. As soon as you stand up and you tell them who you are, you gave your name to the judge, which the name is a property, by the way. We're going to discuss about that. You gave your name to the judge so that he can use it without having any commercial liability. Now, if your name, of course, is copyright, then you're going to have to notify everyone that you're not willing to do business without compensation. And now they have a big problem. They're going to have to use every single trick in the book so that they can get your agreement to cooperate with them. So let's start talk about how we got in this mess. Now, we know that God, which we call it God, the divine power, created man. So God is the creator, and man cannot go above God. This is natural law. Now, man created a constitution, which is a contract, and the constitution created a government. And a government created corporations like IRS and all the other corporations. Now, since we created the government, how come today the government is on top of us and forcing us to abide by all these rules, codes, laws, and if we don't abide with it, then obviously we're in trouble. So it's against the natural law if we think it that way. However, there was a very smart move. It was done back in the 30s. And what it was done is, which basically the majority of the people, they missed it, a sovereign is a sovereign. A corporation cannot control a sovereign because it's created by a sovereign. Corporations, they're fictitious entities. It's a legal entity, however, it's not a human being. It's been created by us. So what I'm trying to say is, when you create a corporation, you create it for your own benefit. And if you don't like it, you just get rid of it and have another corporation. Now, having this in mind, what happened is, when a child was born, the parents, they registered the child with the state or the government agencies. And they sold it to the American people. That was the Maternity Act in, I think, 1912. They sold it to the people that the government will take care of the children, since we had the household, the father working, and the mother used to take care of the children. So they wanted to help the mother and the children, so they passed this Maternity Act. And one of the Maternity Acts says that, well, since the husband is the government. So what happened, when you register your child with the government, now the government will create a new corporate entity, which is your trade name, the trade name of the child, so that when he becomes 18 years old, he will be able to do business with the corporate world. Now, why do you need a corporate entity to do business with a corporate world? It's very important. A sovereign person has a 100% liability on his actions. He is responsible for everything that he does. If he commits a crime, he cannot hide. He has to pay for it. A corporate entity is a limited liability, so it's a limited power also. So you cannot do business with a corporation because it doesn't work in natural law. A corporation can do business with a corporation. Corporation, which is a limited liability, cannot do business with a sovereign, which is unlimited liability. One person over here taking full responsibility, and another person is not taking any responsibility. It doesn't work. So they created a name which is similar to your name, but in all capital letter. Now, if you go in English grammar, you will see that proper nouns, proper English doesn't recognize all capital letter. It's always upper and lower case. So the child's name, its Christian name, it's upper and lower case. It represents the child. However, when you register, the government will create a corporate entity, which is your trade name that you will be doing a business with the corporate world, and it's going to be all capital letter. Now, in order to verify this, you're going to have to go to your wallet, and you're going to have to get all your documents out, and you will see that not even a single document will spell your name upper lower case. Everything is in capital letter. And the reason why, because those wonderful benefits and cards, it's not issued to you per se. It's been issued to your trade name. So if you have a Social Security card, that's not yours. That's for the trade name. The trade name has a Social Security card. The trade name has a driver's license, passports, and credit cards. and you will see everything in capital letter. Now, you can go to the bank to verify this and ask them if they can spell your name on their computer, upper lowercase. The teller probably will say, no problem, I'll do it. And as soon as she starts typing, even though their computer is the same as any other computer, you can do upper lowercase or capital letter. When she starts typing upper lowercase, the computer will input all capital letters. She's going to say, I don't understand this. How come it's, I keep punching upper lowercase, but it's all capital letter. Well, I guess that's the way the computer is set up. Well, the system is set up this way. Because that bank account, it's not yours. The bank account, it belongs to the trade name, all capital letter. Now, you are the authorized signature. You're not the owner. If you want to check on that, if you have personal checks where there is this, a line where you have to sign, well, it looks like a line, but it's not. That's small writings that you have to magnify 40 times, and it will say authorized signatory. It doesn't say owner. Of course, you're not going to see it if you check it right now, but if you have a magnifying glass, you will see that it says authorized signatory. Because your signature, basically, you're putting on the check on somebody else's account. It's not your account. It's the corporate account. So what we're trying to say is there are two entities involved which people, most of the people, they're confused by saying, well, my name is Vic Bedian, so I am the, I have a social security number, I have a driver's license. No, you don't. Upper lowercase, the human being, flesh and blood, you cannot have any privileges. Some people, they say, I would like to get my sovereignty. What do I do? And I keep telling them, you are a sovereign. You cannot just take it back. You are a sovereign. Now, if you think you're not a sovereign, you're in the wrong place. You are a sovereign. You're created by God. You're a flesh and blood. You are a sovereign. You're accountable for every single action that you do in your life. However, you surrender your sovereignty as soon as you get involved in contracts. And that happens when you are 18 years old and you start getting involved in Social Security, you're getting involved getting a driver's license, you're getting involved by signing the 1040. All these privileges, you do it voluntarily. Now, no one is putting a gun in your head to get involved. However, the system is set up in a way that by the time you're 18, you are a good citizen. The schools, they're going to teach you how to file your taxes. They will basically tell you that you need to get a degree, a job, and you need to pay your taxes so that you can help the country. I have no problem by helping the country. I have no problem by supporting the country, the wealth. However, I do have a problem personally to pay to a third party, not to the benefit of our country, to the benefit of whoever set up this system, which is the international bankers. Now, let's talk about this UCC and what it means to us. Of course, there is natural law. No one can take it away from us. There is the common law, which is English law. And the common law, it's not written, by the way. However, we have books on the common law. And then there is the commercial law. These international bankers, which has nothing to do with the United States, by the way, because every single bank, it's chartered from England. So all their charters comes from England. England controls all the banking system. England controls all the court system and the representatives, which is the judges and the attorneys. And international corporations also controls the media, not by fraud, by money. They finance. They bought every single one of them. That's why you're not going to hear about this information, because they decide what to put it on the air, what not to put it on the air. So the whole system is controlled by international bankers, international financier, and they are basically implying the rules and regulations. So don't complain about it, because you cannot change it. They have the money, they created the money, and basically we accepted whatever they offered. If you want to be in the system, well, I say in the system, that means in civilization, in this city in Los Angeles, and you want to live like a decent person, and not stopped by any government officials, then you're going to have to play the game, which is accepting your Social Security, opening a bank account, credit cards, paying taxes. You have to do all these things. Well, paying taxes, I don't know, but you have to, the system will basically force you to do all this. You go to apply for a job, and they'll tell you that you need Social Security number. So if you don't have one, they're going to give you trouble. Of course, there are a lot of other ways to deal with it, but we're not going to discuss about those things. The last time when I checked with the Library of Congress, there was over 3 million books, law books, over 80 million statutes. Statutes, they're laws in commerce. And what are these laws? These laws basically based on contracts. And you're really surprised when you're in front of the judge and it says that ignorance of the law is no excuse. And you think about it, there are 80 million of them. So how can I just, you know, try to remember all these 80 million codes so that I don't violate them? It's impossible. However, if you understand that these codes and laws applies only for corporations, remember, a sovereign, which is a king, doesn't need regulations. He is responsible for his actions. A corporation needs to be regulated because it's a limited liability. There are certain things that corporation can do and certain things that they cannot do. It needs to be regulated. So your name controls it, and who has a security interest? Since you never claimed your property, the government assumes the ownership. Assumes the ownership doesn't mean that they're the owners, but they assume that they have a security interest because it was given to them so that they can use it. What the government do with your names? We know that as of 1933, we lost our financial freedom to the international bankers, and basically we were out of gold and silver, so the international bankers, they put us in a bankruptcy. Of course, you can have a copy of that in the book so that it shows that we went to bankruptcy. When I say we, it's the United States government. And since we lost the gold and the silver, then basically we accepted the Federal Reserve as U.S. money, and we start paying interest on private currency, which it doesn't belong to us. What is a Federal Reserve note? It's a promise to pay. What it promised to pay from the international bankers? It's promise to pay, promise to pay. So basically, they don't promise to pay nothing. They just promise to pay, a promise to pay. So if you give a Federal Reserve note back to the bank for redemption, they'll give you another promissory note. So that's the whole system. We have to find out what is the bottom line if the whole system is based on promissory notes. So we should really understand these codes and use it to our benefit. This book, as I said, it doesn't talk about going against the codes, going against the law. It talks about using the codes, understanding it, and you don't violate any codes. However, if you understand it, then you will be able to play the game of commerce. It's very important. Since we have no choice in this life, when you were living, we have to survive. In order to survive, you have to work. In order to work, the only mean of currency that is given to us, it's private promissory note from Federal Reserve. And we are accepting that for exchange our labors. So basically, if the banks, they're giving us their promissory note, and this is the U.S. currency, and every single dollar, U.S. dollar in our account, it's a promissory note, then let's find out what we can do with this promissory note and how we can play the game. A game is a game, a tennis game. If you don't know how to play tennis, you shouldn't participate in the game. You cannot go, and the court system is the same way. It's a game. You cannot go and say that I would like to participate in tennis, and you have a referee, which is the judge, and the other party, he knows all the rules. Maybe it's McEnroe is going to, you know, play with you. And you start playing. You don't know how to start. You don't know the terms or the rules of the game. And in 5 minutes, the referee is going to say, game is over. You lose, you win. And you look and says, I don't understand this game. Well, it doesn't matter. You lost. So in life, it's the same way. If you don't know how to play this commerce game, you're going to lose your property. You're going to lose your car. You're going to lose your I'm not saying that everybody's going to lose, but it's just a matter of numbers. If you have 100 people in the United States and there is only $100 given from the Federal Reserve, you have only $100 in circulation. Now, the Federal Reserve would require an interest on their private money. So if they give you $100 for 100 people, and those 100 people, they're going to do business together. However, at the end of the year, there is $105 to pay back to the Federal Reserve. Well, if there is only $100 in circulation, how are you going to pay $105? You can't do that. So someone out of the 10, it's going to be short $5. And that person will lose either his car, either his house, will lose something that he owns. And of course, if you multiply that by billions of dollars and trillions of dollars, every time that you borrow funds, you create more debt in the system. So when they talk about getting rid of the national debt, that is not going to happen as long as we borrow our own money. So that's not going to happen. Now, statistically, today, we pay probably, including the all the corporate taxes, debts, U.S. debts, private debts, I would say about $32 trillion probably it's going to be our production of the national production, and probably 70% of that it's going to be paid for interest and debts. So what's happening, we're creating more debt and more debt and more debt every single year, every single day. So forget about getting rid of the debts. However, if you know what you're doing in commerce, you will be able to overcome all these problems, especially financial problems, by not violating any law. I'm going to have to say this 10,000 times because some people, they get involved in our conference call and they say that, well, I heard some people, they went to jail because they read this book. Well, that's not true. 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, we had a lady coming in. I don't know where she was coming. I mean, I had a pretty understanding where she was coming from. But luckily, there are a lot of people jumped in the line, and basically they said that, well, they had a lot of successes with this book, and all those people that they're in trouble, basically, they're in trouble not because of the book. It's because they've done some other things, creative things, that the book doesn't talk about it. The problem with this process, the reason why we have this meeting, I want to make sure that whoever is here, when you leave today, you will have an understanding and you will feel so strong about what you're doing that you don't have to bother with anyone coming after you because you're using the law. You're using the codes. It's very important. Okay, those people, by the way, that they're in trouble, yes, they probably bought the book, but unfortunately, they added some stuff because they go to so many seminars and they start picking up a little bit information from here, a little bit from there, and a little bit from the book, and they combine them and they call it redemption process. There isn't such a thing as redemption process. This is like, it's a name, it's given to this process, but it's not specifically for this book. Everybody calls it redemption process. Now, the main people that they go in trouble with the law are those who has a misunderstanding of this process. This is not a tool to go after someone and damage them. This is not the intention of the book at all. This book doesn't talk about going and get even with someone that is coming after you or you are in a battle with someone. This book, it doesn't talk about how to take advantage of the system and just go and damage someone. This is not all about. This book only makes you aware of all the codes, and you don't want to have, you want to have a peaceful life. You don't want, isn't that basically the bottom line? We want to be left alone from these people that they're coming after us, right? If we're not criminals, we haven't committed a crime, we haven't damaged someone, so basically we don't want to be subject to any violations of codes. We want the IRS agent to leave us alone. We want the banker to leave us alone. We want this attorneys to leave us alone. We want the court system to leave us alone. The bottom line is this. You cannot be forced to do business with someone unless you agree upon. So, I don't want to do business with a cop. I don't want to do business with a judge. I don't want to do business with an IRS agent. So leave me alone. I don't want to damage you. Leave me alone. And this is the main problem that we have. Now, because he's an IRS agent, I'm not going to go after him because he is in a profession that he might be damaging some other people. That's not my concern. If he's going to come after me, I want to protect myself. So this book is all about protecting yourself legally by using the commercial codes. Okay? So I want to make sure that everybody understands, for a change, we have something over here that it's not against the system. It teaches you the system and the codes so that you can use it to your advantage. Okay. I'm going to have Jordan Maxwell. Jordan? Okay. I'm going to have Jordan Maxwell to talk about a little bit about these codes, what it means in our life. Some of the codes, there are terms that we don't understand. There are words, hidden words, that we see it every day, but we have no idea what kind of game it's being played behind the curtain. So Jordan Maxwell is going to give us overview of occult and hidden meanings of words, especially in commerce. Okay, so I would invite Jordan Maxwell. He's got 42 years of experience in this type of subject, occult words, symbols and emblems, astrotheology, ancient religions, which is basically, it's the problem that we have all this system set up, and he will explain you that. Thank you.
I've always been interested in the occult. Occult is simply a word meaning hidden, and so much of our powers in this world and the way things work are hidden. And the more one looks at this subject of how the world actually works, you begin to see that there's a magical system. And I'm telling you, there really is a magical system dominating the world of the Western civilization. To go to the basis, the fundamental foundation on which things sit in order to understand. Begin to see how magical use of words and terms and symbols are used, you need to start looking at the world of the occult and politics and religion. And the powers that be in this world have set up a world of symbols and emblems and terms and catchphrases. And once you understand how this system works, it's fascinating. Because for the first time, the world opens up to you a whole new perspective on how government works, on how banks work, on how institutions and education. It is very well planned, organized, and directed. There is a hidden agenda, so to speak. And it's been my desire to uncover this. And once you begin to see the symbols and realize that the symbols for the national coats of arms, for countries, the flags, the seals, the presidential seals, the emblems for the logos and emblems on corporate corporations, especially the corporate emblems for motion pictures and television companies like Columbia Broadcasting System, CBS has the I. The Colombian system goes back to the Colombian faction of the Illuminati back in the early 1700s, not the late 1700s. And I set up a system of merchant banking and had their Phoenician Canaanite symbols and words connected to their societies, their banking societies. We're talking about in the Middle East. And then through the Greece and ultimately through Rome and then into Britannia. And ultimately into this country comes an ancient Druidic Phoenician Canaanite magical system of finance, government, education, and all of it is right in front of you. But if you don't understand what the words are and what the words mean, you're never going to figure out how this stuff works. And incidentally, where do you find a bank? We go to banks all the time. Where do you find a bank? Banks are on both sides of a river. They're called river banks. What does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the currency. Your money is referred to as the currency. This is why when you go to court, you have the current, electricity, because it's the juice. And if you don't have the juice, you don't have it. So if you don't have the juice, you can't capitalize. And the capital is a Latin word meaning money. Consequently, Caesar ruled from what was referred to in history books, Caesar ruled from up on the hill. It was called Capitol Hill, Capitoline Hill, with the Senate. You need to understand that Washington, D.C., as a Jesuit Catholic establishment under international maritime admiralty law, and once you begin to see how the system of the ancient Catholic system, the Jesuits, the ancient Roman Empire, the Phoenician Canaanite banking system is all part of a world-dominating system. Again, I'm saying you better do your homework. You need to understand that according to the old Phoenician Canaanite system, which we call today our judicial education on judicial system, there is no law in this country or in the Western world, no law, federal, state, county, city, commercial, it makes no difference. There is no law on the books anywhere in this country that applies to you as an individual creature. There is no law. They have no control over you, your flesh and blood self. But somebody has to control this show. And so consequently, the ancient Phoenician Canaanites developed a system by which they would assign to every person a second you. And this is the way it works in America. There is two of you. Consequently, the system has made each one of you a corporation. And how now do you distinguish which one, when someone's addressing you, that they're addressing you as the one that your mother gave birth to, or the corporate you? For every piece of important bills, insurance, driver's license, identification, taxes, I don't care what it is, if it's a piece of business, period, in any kind of way, shape, or form, your name must, by law, international maritime admiralty banking law, your name must appear in all capital letters. When you sign your name, upper and lower case, that is applying to your body. Your flesh and blood self is spelled, according to British and American law, upper and lower case, capital letter, lower case. That's you, your personal self. There is no law that can be applied to an upper and lower case name, period. Pass and read on a check what is said where you sign your name. That's why the attorneys tell you, you better check the small print. The Bible of Business on the Earth. Uniform Commercial Code. Uniform Commercial Code is based directly on Vatican canon law, on the Roman canon law. Consequently, when a ship pulls into port, it pulls in and stops, and it's called in its berth. The ship is now in its berth. Because it is on the law of the high seas, or commercial maritime, UCC commercial law, rules the seas. So when the ship pulls into its berth, the first thing the captain must do is to present a certificate of manifest to the port authorities, which means that the port authorities need to know how much is on this ship that you're bringing into our country and our economy. How many TVs, how many cars, whatever you're bringing, how much are you bringing into our economy? So you have to have a certificate of manifest of what is the value of your ship here. What are you doing? Consequently, when you are born, you come out of your mother's water. Therefore, you must have a birth certificate, a certificate of manifest, because you are a corporation-owned item. You are a human resource. This goes back to the German Nazi concept that every human coming out of their mother's water must be birthed. And therefore, you have to have a certificate, a manifest, to see how much this individual is going to make for us in our new world order. I'm telling you that until you understand the laws, the symbols, the emblems, what these words mean, You're never going to suspect how far gone we really are. Did you know, for instance, that your birth certificate is a security on the stock exchange in the New York stock market? Did you know that? Because if you order your birth certificate, get a new one, order your birth certificate, it only costs you, sometimes it's free, it only costs you a few dollars, order your birth certificate. On your birth certificate, all birth certificates in this country, on the bottom, it will tell you, this is printed on security papers. Do not accept if not on full color security paper. Then on the right hand corner, you will always have a series of numbers, red numbers, printed on the birth certificate. Those numbers are a security stock exchange number on the world stock exchange. You go to any good stock office and ask them, check these numbers in your computer and see how much this stock is worth, the certificate. And they will check it on the New York Stock Exchange and find you, your birth certificate, is a stock on the stock exchange in America. Why? Because you are worth money to the international bank that bought you in 1930. We need to wake up. Greatest single enemy to this totalitarian system is a free people. A free people who can do their own thinking, investigate everything, and have the ability to confront the powers that be. And of course we were called, America was called the land of the free and the home of the brave. We are not free and we are not brave.
Okay, Moores, we're back. We've come to the end of the first hour. At this time, the phone lines are now officially open. If you have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand and we will let you in. If you got anything to say, now's the time to do it. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue because we have a lot of stuff to reveal here this evening. Okay? Y'all hold on. code 213. Tell us who you are, what's your question or comment. 213, come on in. Area code 213. Okay. Anybody got any further questions or comments? Go ahead and raise your hand. We'll open up the lines. And you can come on in and tell us what you think about this thing.
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem El of the Tamarite 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amma El, Professor Asif Deanham El, Tahaka Amana El, Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah El, and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Moore's Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Hey, Moses. Going directly into the month of July, for those of you who have problems with your mortgage, you got student loan debt, you got that child support hanging on it, we're going to cancel those contracts. And for those of you who are trying to do that, before you do anything, call me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Now, if you just want the most powerful archives in America, go right there to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And give me a call, Tahaka Amana L. Bay at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll get you some aid on that thing, okay? All right.
Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment.
This is Jason in Colorado. Hey, I was wondering where can I find a step-by-step process to becoming the authorized representative of the straw man?
Go to com and look around up in there and then click on the link to archive.org. And once you get up in there, you will access the master library. And in there, we have everything. Everything. If you're dealing with the patents, the authorized representative, how to use it, how to take it, slap them upside the head with it, all of it right there.
Okay, is there a specific category it's under on the archives?
Oh, well, yes, there's a whole lot of categories. And
okay.
What I would recommend everybody to do, if you once you access the archives, call me, and I would walk you around up in there and show you where to go and what to study. But there's tons of information in there. It is a massive, this thing is massive. And everything that you need to succeed, no matter what it is that you're dealing with in commerce, your nationality, your culture, your story, whatever it is, religion, you name it, it's there. And so, yes, it is under a category, under more than one category. And it's in audio format, it's in video format, it's in PDF format, it's in Word format. And then there's about right around $5,000 worth of dictionaries in there. So you can look up any word on the planet to get clarity on anything that you have to do.
All right.
Okay, well,
I appreciate it.
I certainly appreciate you calling. Thank you, man. Anybody else got a question to comment? Because it's time for us to get down to the meat and potatoes of this thing. And we're going to bring in the minister. And we're going to lay this thing out here this evening. And keep in mind, this is just part one. We're going to do the best we can. We're going to be dealing with money. We're going to be dealing with lawyers. We're going to be dealing with Freemasonry and slavery all together in one big package. Okay, so we're gonna run the first. We're gonna fire the first shot right now.
Rothschild claimed to be Jewish, not the nationality of a Jew, but Jew in terms of belief in God and a follower of divine revelation. But was Mr. Rothschild a moral man? Here's a man that had five sons. And he sent his five sons into five countries. One son went to England. One son to France. One to Austria. One to Italy. And another remained in Germany with the father. And from these sons, and the money that these sons had, they worked and maneuvered and manipulated until they gained control of the central banks of England, France, Austria, Italy, and Germany. The control of these central banks went into the hands of individuals whose interests were not necessarily in harmony with the best interests of that nation. These privately owned central banks became the printer of the money and the extenders of credit of that particular nation. Government and politics in Europe was always controlled by the money interest. Wars were fought, and in order to fight a war, governments had to borrow money. They borrowed money from these central banks. The central banks waxed rich because they loaned money and charged interest, then took over when one side prevailed against the other. And when governments could not satisfy the indebtedness, then some of the natural wealth of that country flowed to the bankers. They would loan money to both sides in the conflict, because they really didn't care who won or who lost. I mean, it's hurtful, but a Jew, Rothschild, loaned money to Adolf Hitler. A Jew, Rothschild. God damn it, you better not open your mouth to call me no anti-Semite. Rothschild and Paul Warburg loaned money to Hitler. Hitler killed little Jews while Rothschild and Warburg stayed in the finest hotels in Europe. But damn it, if you can't call Rothschild anti-Semitic and Warburg an anti-Semite, then don't you open your mouth against me. Yeah. in a book titled None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen and Larry Abraham on page 45. The question is asked, where do governments get the enormous amounts of money that they need? Most, of course, comes from taxation. But governments often spend more than they are willing to tax from their citizens, so governments are forced to borrow. The public is led to believe that the government borrows from the people through savings bonds. Actually, only the smallest percentage of the national debt is held by individuals in this form. Most government bonds, except those owned by the government itself through its trust funds, are held by vast banking firms known as international banks. For centuries, there has been big money to be made by international bankers in financing governments and kings. Such operators, however, are faced with certain thorny problems. We know that smaller banks operate to protect themselves by taking collateral. But what kind of collateral can you get from a government or a king? The process through which one collects a debt from a government or a monarch is not a subject taught in the business schools of the university. And most of us, never having been in the business of financing kings or government, have not given the problem much thought. But there's a king financing business. And to those who can ensure collection, it is a lucrative business. An economics professor named Stuart Crane notes that there are two means used to loan governments money to governments and kings, and two means of collecting on that money. Whenever a business firm borrows big money, the creditor obtains an influence in management to protect its investment. Like a business, no government can borrow big money unless that government is willing to surrender to the creditor some of its sovereignty. Certainly, international bankers who have loaned hundreds of billions of dollars to governments around the world command considerable influence in the policies of such governments. But the ultimate advantage, listen to this, that the creditor has over a king or a president is that if the ruler gets out of line, the banker can finance his enemy or his rival. Therefore, if you want to stay in the lucrative financing business of kings and governments, it is wise to have an enemy or a rival waiting in the wings to unseat every king or every president to whom you lend money. If the king doesn't have an enemy, you got to be able to create one. Now I'm going to show you why America is in so much debt. The founding fathers of this nation said they did not want private control of a central bank, because to them, such a bank would be the detriment of this democracy. Thomas Jefferson saw a privately owned central bank as worse than an opposing army. Thomas Jefferson wanted to keep America free from those things that led to the destruction of many nations and governments in Europe. And so a privately owned central bank was unthinkable to the founding fathers of this nation, and therefore it was written in the Constitution that only Congress should have the right to print the money and the instruments of credit. The debt of America is so great that greater hardship is now being planned by the government for the masses of the American people in order to make America solvent. Did you know that from 1900 to 1913, the federal government had a very manageable debt into the millions of dollars? But in 1913, something happened. Four things were set up in the year 1913. First, the Federal Reserve Bank, the IRS, the FBI, and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, all were set up in the same year. Is that a coincidence? Or is there a tie-in? I don't have time to go into all the details, but by the help of Allah, I'll do that in further writings if it is the will of Allah. But it's enough to say that two German Jews, Paul and Felix Warburg, and the international bankers of Europe wined and dined a senator named Nelson Aldrich, who was the maternal grandfather of Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller. And they wined and dined him for 2 years, showing him the central bank of Europe. Senator Aldrich came back to America and was given the job of being a part of the national, a study of the national monetary system. Nelson Aldrich, with Paul Warburg, had a secret meeting in Jekyll Island, Georgia, off the coast of Georgia. And in that secret meeting, what came out of it was the basis of the Federal Reserve Act. They tried to get it through Congress under the name the Aldrich Federal Reserve Act. But since Aldrich was so tied to the international banking system, the members of Congress, under the leadership of President Taft, you know, they voted it out. So they went back to the drawing board and they redid it. And they pushed it through on December the 22nd, 1913, just as Congress was about to break for the Christmas recess. Wanting to get home quick, they pushed it through. And the Federal Reserve Act became law. But in 1912, there was a great presidential election where William Taft was challenged in his own party by Teddy Roosevelt. Both Roosevelt was financed by some of these international bankers. They hated Taft for his derailing of the Aldrich Federal Reserve Act. So they wanted to get at Taft. But they felt that a Republican shouldn't bring this act before Congress. It would be better if it came through a Democrat. So they same bankers put money behind Woodrow Wilson. And Woodrow Wilson sold the American presidency to the international bankers. He was elected in 1912, and in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act became law, and the Central Bank of the United States was taken over by a group of private banking institutions. Then somebody else began printing the money. Like Rothschild said, he don't care who rules as long as he controls the purse string. In 1913, America was not yet at war. In the last winter solstice of the 6,000-year rule of the enemy, America was betrayed by one of her presidents and one of her senators and one of her members of the United States. Do you know why I'm teaching this subject on Jesus saying? Because after I say what I'm saying today, if I ain't got a savior, I'm sure going to need one after I say what I say today. Let me just finish. Don't be frightened for me. You better be frightened for yourself. Because some stuff is going down in America right now as we speak. That all our lives are in danger right now. And I've got to sound the alarm, brothers and sisters. I don't care nothing about my life. It's your life that I want to save. Listen. Now that the bank that prints money is in the hands of private interests, the idea is to push up and inspire the government to borrow. How do you do it? Get America into war. The war in Europe started in 1914. And by 1917, under a lie about the Lusitania being sunk by German subs, the American people were called into a war to end all wars. Boy, this is heavy, man. I mean, you can't believe how wicked, how low down and rotten. Wait a minute. You can't believe how wicked these people are to play games with your lives and the lives of your babies. Create a war just to get more money, to charge more interest, and send your babies to die for bullshit. Went to war in 1917.
and black people sued to become a part of the war. Because we didn't want to be left out of America. So America signed us up to fight the war. And black men died. But they don't know what the hell they were dying for. And neither did the white ones know what they were dying for. But the man of sin gotta be revealed. And I thank God that he put it in my heart. I don't have no fear of those bastards. I want to expose them all. God is present. God is in the world. And I'm going to prove to you by my life that God has power to save.
The American Revolutionary War began as the American colonies sought to detach from England and its oppressive monarchy. Though many reasons are cited for the revolution, one in particular sticks out as the prime cause, that King George III of England outlawed the interest-free, independent currency the colonies were producing and using for themselves, in turn forcing them to borrow money from the Central Bank of England at interest, immediately putting the colonies into debt. And, as Benjamin Franklin later wrote, the refusal of King George III to allow the colonies to operate an honest money system which freed the ordinary man from the clutches of the money manipulators was probably the prime cause of the revolution. In 1783, America won its independence from England. However, its battle against the central bank concept and the corrupt, greed-filled men associated with it had just begun. So what is a central bank? A central bank is an institution that produces the currency of an entire nation. Based on historical precedent, two specific powers are inherent in central banking practice: the control of interest rates and the control of the money supply, or inflation. The central bank does not simply supply a government's economy with money, it loans it to them at interest. Then, through the use of increasing and decreasing the supply of money, the central bank regulates the value of the currency being issued. It is critical to understand that the entire structure of this system can only produce one thing in the long run: debt. It doesn't take a lot of ingenuity to figure this scam out. For every single dollar produced by the central bank is loaned at interest. That means every single dollar produced is actually the dollar plus a certain percent of debt based on that dollar. And since the central bank has a monopoly over the production of the currency for the entire country, and they loan each dollar out with immediate debt attached to it, where does the money to pay for the debt come from? It can only come from the central bank again, which means the central bank has to perpetually increase its money supply to temporarily cover the outstanding debt created, which in turn, since that new money is loaned out at interest as well, creates even more debt. The end result of this system without fail is slavery, for it is impossible for the government and thus the public to ever come out of the self-generating debt. The founding fathers of this country were well aware of this.
I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of currency, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson. If you want to remain slaves to the bankers and pay for the cost of your own slavery, let them continue to create money and control the nation's credit. Sir Hosiah Stamp.
By the early 20th century, the U.S. had already implemented and removed a few central banking systems, which were swindled into place by ruthless banking interests. At this time, the dominant families in the banking and business world were the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Warburgs, the Rothschilds. And in the early 1900s, they sought to push once again legislation to create another central bank. However, they knew the government and public were very weary of such an institution, so they needed to create an incident to affect public opinion. So, J.P. Morgan, publicly considered a financial luminary at the time, exploited his mass influence by publishing rumors that a prominent bank in New York was insolvent or bankrupt. Morgan knew this would cause mass hysteria, which would affect other banks as well. And it did. The public, in fear of losing their deposits, immediately began mass withdrawals. Consequently, the banks were forced to call in their loans, causing the recipients to sell their property, and thus a spiral of bankruptcies, repossessions, and turmoil emerged. Putting the pieces together a few years later, Frederick Allen of Life magazine wrote, "The Morgan interests took advantage to precipitate the panic, guiding it shrewdly as it progressed." Unaware of the fraud, the panic of 1907 led to a congressional investigation headed by Senator Nelson Aldrich, who had intimate ties to the banking cartels and later became part of the Rockefeller family through marriage. The commission, led by Aldrich, recommended a central bank should be implemented so a panic like 1907 could never happen again. This was the spark the international bankers needed to initiate their plan. In 1910, a secret meeting was held at a J.P. Morgan estate on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia. It was there that the central banking bill called the Federal Reserve Act was written. This legislation was written by bankers, not lawmakers. This meeting was so secretive, so concealed from government and public knowledge, that the 10 or so figures who attended disguised their names when en route to the island. After this bill was constructed, it was then handed over to their political frontman, Senator Nelson Aldrich, to push through Congress. And in 1913, with heavy political sponsorship by the bankers, Woodrow Wilson became president, having already agreed to sign the Federal Reserve Act in exchange for campaign support. And 2 days before Christmas, when most of Congress was at home with their families, the Federal Reserve Act was voted in, and Wilson in turn made it law. Years later, Woodrow Wilson wrote, in regret,
"Our great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is privately concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all our activities are in the hands of a few men, who necessarily, by very reason of their own limitations, chill and check and destroy genuine economic freedom. We have become one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of small groups of dominant men." President Woodrow Wilson.
Congressman Lewis McFadden also expressed the truth after the passage of the bill. A world banking system was being set up here, a superstate controlled by international bankers, acting together to enslave the world for their own pleasure. The Fed has usurped the government. Now, the public was told that the Federal Reserve System was an economic stabilizer, and inflation and economic crises were a thing of the past. Well, as history has shown, nothing is further from the truth. The fact is, the international bankers now had a streamlined machine to expand their personal ambitions.
It's alive!
For example, from 1914 to 1919, the Fed increased the money supply by nearly 100%, resulting in extensive loans to small banks and the public. Then, in 1920, the Fed called in mass percentages of the outstanding money supply, thus resulting in the supporting banks having to call in huge numbers of loans, and, just like 1907, bank runs, bankruptcy, and collapse occurred. Over 5,400 competitive banks outside of the Federal Reserve System collapsed, further consolidating the monopoly of a small group of international bankers. Privy to this crime, Congressman Lindbergh stepped up and said in 1921, "Under the Federal Reserve Act, panics are scientifically created. The present panic is the first scientifically created one, worked out as we figure a mathematical equation." However, the panic of 1920 was just a warm-up. From 1921 to 1929, the Fed again increased the money supply, resulting once again in extensive loans to the public and banks. There was also a fairly new type of loan called a margin loan in the stock market. Very simply, the margin loan allowed an investor to put down only 10% of a stock's price, with the other 90% being loaned through the broker. In other words, a person could own $1,000 worth of stock with only $100 down. This method was very popular in the roaring 1920s, as everyone seemed to be making money in the market. However, there was a catch to this loan. It could be called in at any time and had to be paid within 24 hours. This is termed a margin call, and the typical result of a margin call is the selling of the stock purchased with the loan. So, a few months before October in 1929, J.D. Rockefeller, Bernard Baruch, and other insiders quietly exited the market. And on October 24, 1929, the New York financiers who furnished the margin loans started calling them in mass. This sparked an instantaneous, massive sell-off in the market, for everyone had to cover the margin loans. It then triggered mass bank runs for the same reason, in turn collapsing over 16,000 banks, enabling the conspiring international bankers to not only buy up rival banks at a discount, but to also buy up whole corporations at pennies on the dollar. It was the greatest robbery in American history. But that didn't stop there. Rather than expanding the money supply in order to recover from this economic collapse, the Fed actually contracted it, fueling one of the largest depressions in history. Once again outraged, Congressman Louis McFadden, a longtime opponent of the banking cartels, began bringing impeachment proceedings against the Federal Reserve Board, saying of the crash and depression, "It was a carefully contrived occurrence. International bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair so that they might emerge the ruler." Now, having reduced the society to squalor, the Federal Reserve bankers decided that the gold standard should be removed. In order to do this, they needed to acquire the remaining gold in the system. So, under the pretense of helping to end the depression, came the 1933 gold seizure. Under the threat of imprisonment for 10 years, everyone in America was required to turn in all gold bullion to the Treasury, essentially robbing the public of what little wealth they had left. And at the end of 1933, the gold standard was abolished. If you look at a dollar bill from before 1933, it says it is redeemable in gold. You look at a dollar bill today, it says it is legal tender, which means it is backed by absolutely nothing. It is worthless paper. The only thing that gives our money value is how much of it is in circulation. Therefore, the power to regulate the money supply is also the power to regulate its value, which is also the power to bring entire economies and societies to its knees.
Give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes its laws. Miriam Shul Rothschild, founder of the Rothschild Banking Dynasty.
It's important to clearly understand, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It is about as federal as Federal Express. It makes its own policies and is under virtually no regulation by the U.S. government. It is a private bank that loans all the currency at interest to the government, completely consistent with the fraudulent central banking model that the country sought to escape from when it declared independence in the American Revolutionary War. Now, going back to 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was not the only unconstitutional bill pushed through Congress. They also pushed the federal income tax. It's worthwhile to point out that the American public's ignorance towards the federal income tax is a testament to how dumbed down and oblivious the American population really is. First of all, the federal income tax is completely unconstitutional, as it is a direct, unapportioned tax. All direct taxes have to be apportioned to be legal based on the Constitution. Secondly, the required number of states in order to ratify the amendment to allow the income tax was never met. And this has even been cited in modern court cases.
If you examine the 16th Amendment carefully, you would find that a sufficient number of states never ratified that amendment.
Third, at the present day, roughly 35% of the average worker's income is taken from them via this tax. That means you work 4 months out of the year to fulfill this tax obligation. And guess where that money goes? It goes to pay the interest on the currency being produced by the fraudulent Federal Reserve Bank, a system that does not have to exist at all. The money you make working 4 months out of the year goes almost literally into the pockets of the international bankers who own the private Federal Reserve Bank. And fourth, even with the fraudulent government claim as to the legality of the income tax, there is literally no statute, no law in existence that requires you to pay this tax, period.
I really expected that, of course, there's a law that you can point to in the law book, the code, that requires you to file a tax return. Of course there is. I was at that point where I couldn't find the statute that clearly made a person liable, at least not me and most people I know, and I had no choice in my mind except to resign.
Based on the research that I did throughout the year 2000 and that I'm still doing, I have not found that law. I've asked Congress, we've asked a lot of people in the IRS, IRS commissioners, helpers. They can't answer, because if they answer, the American people are going to know that this whole thing is a fraud.
I haven't filed a federal income tax return since I left.
I have not filed a tax return since 1999.
The income tax is nothing less than the enslavement of the entire country. Now, the control of the economy and the perpetual robbery of wealth is only one side of the Rubik's Cube the bankers hold in their hands. The next tool for profit and control is war. Since the inception of the Federal Reserve in 1913, a number of large and small wars have commenced. The three most pronounced were World War I, World War II, and Vietnam. World War I. In 1914, European wars broke out centered around England and Germany. The American public wanted nothing to do with the war. In turn, President Woodrow Wilson publicly declared neutrality. However, under the surface, the U.S. administration was looking for any excuse it could find to enter it. In a noted observation by Secretary of State William Jennings, the large banking interests were deeply interested in the World War because of the wide opportunities for large profits. It's important to understand that the most lucrative thing that can happen for the international bankers is war, for it forces the country to borrow even more money from the Federal Reserve Bank at interest. Woodrow Wilson's top advisor and mentor was Colonel Edward House, a man with intimate connections with the international bankers who wanted in the war. In a documented conversation between Colonel House, Wilson's advisor, and Sir Edward Grey, the Foreign Secretary of England, regarding how to get America into the war, Grey inquired, "What will Americans do if Germans sink an ocean liner with American passengers on board?" House responded, "I believe that a flame of indignation would sweep the United States, and that by itself would be sufficient to carry us into war." So, on May 7, 1915, on essentially the suggestion of Sir Edward Grey, a ship called the Lusitania was deliberately sent into German-controlled waters, where German military vessels were known to be. And, as expected, German U-boats torpedoed the ship, exploding stored ammunition, killing 1,200 people. To further understand the deliberate nature of this setup, the German embassy actually put advertisements in the New York Times telling people that if they boarded the Lusitania, they did so at their own risk, as such a ship sailing from America to England through the war zone would be liable to destruction. In turn, and as anticipated, the sinking of the Lusitania caused a wave of anger among the American population, and America entered the war a short time after. The First World War caused 323,000 American deaths. J.D. Rockefeller made $200 million off of it. Not to mention the war cost about $30 billion for America, most of which was borrowed from the Federal Reserve Bank at interest, furthering the profits of the international bankers. World War II. On December 7, 1941, Japan attacked the American fleet at Pearl Harbor, triggering our entry into that war. President Franklin D. Roosevelt declared the attack was a day that will live in infamy. A day of infamy indeed, but not because of the alleged surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. After 60 years of surfacing information, it is clear that not only was the attack on Pearl Harbor known weeks in advance, it was outright wanted and provoked. Roosevelt, whose family had been New York bankers since the 18th century, whose uncle Frederick was on the original Federal Reserve Board, was very sympathetic to the interests of the international bankers, and the interest was to enter the war, as we've seen, nothing is more profitable for international bankers than war. In a journal entry by Roosevelt's Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, dated November 25, 1941, he documented a conversation he had with Roosevelt. The question was, how should we maneuver them into firing the first shot? It was desirable to make sure the Japanese be the ones to do this, so that there should remain no doubt as to who were the aggressors. In the months leading up to the attack on Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt had done almost everything in his power to anger the Japanese, showing a posture of aggression. He halted all of Japan's imports of American petroleum. He froze all the Japanese assets in the United States. He made public loans to nationalist China and supplied military aid to the British, both enemies of Japan in the war, which, by the way, is completely in violation of international war rules. And on December 4th, 3 days before the attack, Australian intelligence told Roosevelt about a Japanese task force moving towards Pearl Harbor. Roosevelt ignored it. So, as hoped and allowed, on December 7, 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, killing 2,400 soldiers. Before Pearl Harbor, 83% of the American public wanted nothing to do with the war. After Pearl Harbor, 1 million men volunteered for the war. It is important to note, Nazi Germany's war effort was largely supported by two organizations, one of which was called IG Farben. IG Farben produced 84% of Germany's explosives. One of the unspoken partners of IG Farben was J.D. Rockefeller's Standard Oil Company in America. In fact, the German Air Force could not operate without a special additive patented by Rockefeller Standard Oil. The drastic bombing of London by Nazi Germany, for example, was made possible by a $20 million sale of fuel to IG Farben by the Rockefeller Standard Oil Company. This is just one small point on the topic of how American business funded both sides of World War II. One other treasonous organization worth mentioning is the Union Banking Corporation of New York City. Not only did it finance numerous aspects of Hitler's rise to power, along with actual materials during the war, it was also a Nazi money laundering bank, which was eventually exposed for having millions of dollars of Nazi money in its vaults. The Union Banking Corporation of New York was eventually seized for violations of the Trading with the Enemy Act. Guess who the director and vice president of the Union Bank was? Prescott Bush, our current president's grandfather, and of course our former president's father. Keep that in mind when considering the moral and political dispositions of the Bush family. Vietnam. The United States' official declaration of war in North Vietnam in 1964 came after an alleged incident involving two U.S. destroyers being attacked by North Vietnamese PT boats in the Gulf of Tonkin. This was known as the Gulf of Tonkin incident. This single situation was the catalytic pretext for massive troop deployment and full-fledged warfare. One problem, however, the attack on the U.S. destroyers by Vietnamese PT boats never happened. It was a completely staged event to have an excuse to enter the war. Former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara stated years later that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a mistake, while many other insiders and officers have come forward, relaying that it was a contrived farce, a complete lie. Once in the war, it was business as usual. In October 1966, President Lyndon Johnson lifted trade restrictions on the Soviet bloc, knowing full well that the Soviets were providing upwards of 80% of North Vietnam's war supply. Consequently, Rockefeller interests financed factories in the Soviet Union, which the Soviets used to manufacture military equipment and send it to North Vietnam. However, the funding of both sides of this conflict was only one side of the coin. In 1985, Vietnam's rules of engagement were declassified. This detailed what American troops were and were not allowed to do in the war. It included absurdities like North Vietnamese anti-aircraft missile systems could not be bombed until they were known to be fully operational. No enemy could be pursued once they crossed the border of Laos or Cambodia. And most revealing of all, the most critical strategic targets were not allowed to be attacked unless initiated by high military officials. Apart from these imposed ludicrous limitations, North Vietnam was informed of these restrictions and therefore could base entire strategies around the limitations of the American forces. This is why the war went on so long. And the bottom line is this: the Vietnam War was never meant to be won, just sustained. This war for profit resulted in 58,000 American deaths and 3 million dead Vietnamese. So, where are we now? September 11th was the jumpstart for what is now an accelerated agenda by the ruthless elite. It was a staged war pretext no different than the sinking of the Lusitania, the provoking of Pearl Harbor, and the Gulf of Tonkin lie. In fact, if 9/11 wasn't a planned war pretext, it would be an exception to the rule. It has been used to launch two unprovoked illegal wars, one against Iraq and one against Afghanistan. However, 9/11 was a pretext for another war as well, the war against you. The Patriot Act, Homeland Security, the Military Tribunals Act, and other legislations are all completely and entirely designed to destroy your civil liberties and limit your ability to fight back against what is coming. Currently in the United States, unannounced to most brainwashed Americans, your home can be searched without a warrant, without you being home. You can in turn be arrested with no charges revealed to you, detained indefinitely with no access to a lawyer, and legally tortured, all under the suspicion that you might be a terrorist. If you need a painted picture of what is happening in this country, let's recognize how history repeats itself. In February 1933, Hitler staged a false flag attack, burning down his own German parliament building, the Reichstag, and blamed it on communist terrorists. Within the next few weeks, he passed the Enabling Act, which completely eradicated the German constitution, destroying people's liberties. He then led a series of preemptive wars, all justified to the German people as necessary to maintaining Homeland Security.
An evil exists that threatens every man, woman, and child of this great nation. We must take steps to ensure our domestic security and protect our homeland. George W. Bush? No, Adolf Hitler.
Network of terrorists and every government that supports them.
It's time to wake up. The people in power go out of their way to make sure that you are perpetually misled and manipulated. The majority's perception of reality, especially in the political arena, is not their own. It is shrewdly imposed upon them without them even knowing it. For example, the public at large actually believes the invasion of Iraq is going badly, as sectarian violence doesn't seem to stop. What the public fails to see is that the destabilization of Iraq is exactly what the people behind the government want. This war is to be sustained so the region can be divided up, domination of the oil maintained, continual profits reaped for the defense contractors, and most importantly, permanent military bases established to be used as a launching pad against other oil-bearing, non-conforming countries such as Iran and Syria. For further implication that the civil war and destabilization is purely intentional, in 2005, two elite British SAS officers were arrested by Iraqi police after being caught driving around in their car shooting at civilians while dressed up as Arabs. After being arrested and taken to a jail in Basra, the British Army immediately requested the release of these men. When the Basra government refused, British tanks came in and physically broke out the men from the Basra prison.
If you wish to destroy an area, how do you do it? Well, there are two ways. You can go in there and bomb it and so forth, but that is not very efficient. What you do is you try to get the people in that area to kill each other and to destroy their own territory, their own farms, and that's what's been done in that area. The way in which you destroy an opponent is get him to destroy himself by dividing his ranks against one another. And then you feed both sides. You have agents feeding both sides, inflaming both sides. And they kill each other off. And it's time that some of us woke up to this reality, to understand that people who try to maintain empires and create empires do it by manipulating the people they're trying to conquer.
You might want to ask yourself why the entire culture is utterly saturated with mass media entertainment from all sides, while the educational system in America continues its stupefying downward slide since the U.S. government decided to take over and subsidize the public school system.
What your government pays for, it gets. When we understand that, then we look at government-financed institutions of education and see the kind of students and the kind of education that's being turned out by these government-financed schools. Logic will tell you that if what is being turned out in those schools was not in accord with what the state and the federal government wanted, then it would change it. The bottom line is that the government is getting what they have ordered. They do not want your children to be educated. They do not want you to think too much. That is why our country and our world has become so proliferated with entertainments, mass media, television shows, amusement parks, drugs, alcohol, and every kind of entertainment to keep the human mind entertained so that you don't get in the way of important people by doing too much thinking. You had better wake up and understand that there are people who are guiding your life and you don't even know it.
We're in a lot of trouble because you people and 62 million other Americans are listening to me right now, because less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Because the only truth you know is what you get over this tube. right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube is the gospel, the ultimate revelation. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. This tube is the most awesome goddamn force in the whole godless world. And woe is us if it ever falls in the hands of the wrong people. And when the largest company in the world controls the most awesome goddamn propaganda force in the whole godless world, who knows what shit will be peddled for truth on this network. So you listen to me. Listen to me. Television is not the truth. Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds. We're all you know. You're beginning to believe the illusions we're spinning here. You're beginning to think that the tube is reality and that your own lives are unreal. You do whatever the tube tells you. You dress like the tube. You eat like the tube. You raise your children like the tube. You even think like the tube. This is mass madness, you maniacs. In God's name, you people are the real thing. We are the illusion.
The last thing the men behind the curtain want is a conscious, informed public capable of critical thinking. They seek to keep you in a distracted, naive bubble. And they are doing a damn good job of it. In 2005, an arrangement between Canada, Mexico, and the United States was made. This arrangement, unannounced to the public, unregulated by Congress, merges the United States, Mexico, and Canada into one entity, erasing all borders. It's called the North American Union, and you might want to ask yourself why you've never heard of this. In fact, there is only one mainstream reporter who has actually heard of and has had the courage to cover this issue.
The Bush administration's open borders policy and its decision to ignore the enforcement of this country's immigration laws is part of a broader agenda. President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it, and he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
It's a deal that few have even heard of.
It's being done again by very few people at the very top on behalf of the investment class, but the working class of people, political officials across our country from communities, from cities and so forth, they don't know anything about this.
This isn't some trade agreement. It is a total removal of sovereignty from these countries, which will also result in a completely new currency called the Amero.
Apart from that, I think one thing people who are dollar-based need to focus on is the Amero. That's the one thing that nobody's talking about that I think is going to have a big impact on everybody's life in Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. The Amero is the proposed new currency for the North American community, which is being developed right now between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico to make a borderless community much like the EU, and the dollar, Canadian dollar, U.S. dollar, and the Mexican peso replaced by the Amero.
By default of this agreement, the American Constitution will eventually be obsolete. You would think that a situation like this would be on the cover of every major newspaper. That is until you realize the people who are behind this movement are the same people behind the mainstream media, and you are not told what you're not supposed to know. The North American Union is the same concept as the European Union, the African Union, and the soon-to-be Asian Union, and the same people are behind all of them. And when the time is right, the North American Union, the European Union, the African Union, and the Asian Union will be merged together, forming the final stages of a plan these men have been working on for over 60 years. A one-world government.
We shall have world government whether or not we like it. The only question is whether the world government will be achieved by conquest or consent. Paul Warburg, Counsel on Foreign Relations and architect of the illegal and unconstitutional Federal Reserve System. We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during those years. But the world is more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supranational sovereignty of intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries. David Rockefeller, Director of the Council on Foreign Relations.
One bank, one army, one center of power. And if we have learned anything from history, it is that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is Aaron Russo, a filmmaker and former politician. To his left is Nicholas Rockefeller of the infamous Rockefeller Banking and Business Dynasty. After maintaining a close friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller, Aaron eventually ended the relationship, appalled by what he had learned about the Rockefellers and their ambitions.
I got a call one day from an attorney woman I knew, and she said, "Would you like to meet one of the Rockefellers?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And we became friends, and he began to divulge a lot of things to me. So he said to me one night, he said that there's going to be an event there, and out of that event, you're going to see we're going to go into Afghanistan, so we can run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We're going to go into Iraq to take the oil and establish a base in the Middle East. And we're going to go into Venezuela and try and get rid of Chavez. And the first two they've accomplished, Chavez they didn't accomplish. And so you're going to see guys going into caves looking for looking for people that they're never going to find. You know, he was laughing about the fact that you have this war on terror. There's no real enemy. He's talking about how by having this war on terror, you can never win it, because it's an eternal war, and so you can always keep taking people's liberties away. And I said, how are you going to convince people that this war is real? He said, but the media can convince everybody it's real. I mean, you know, it's just that you keep talking about things, you keep saying it over and over and over again, and eventually people believe it. You know, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11, which is another lie. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror, and now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie, and now they're going to do Iran, you know? And it's all one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. Now, I would say to them, what are you doing this for? What's the point of this thing? You have all the money in the world you ever want. You have all the power. I said, you know, you're hurting people. It's not a good thing. And he would say, what do you care about the people for? Take care of yourself and you take care of your family. And then I said to him, what are the ultimate goals here? He said, the ultimate goal is to get everybody in this world chipped with the RFID chip, and have all money be on those chips and everything on those chips. And if anybody wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off their chip.
That's right, microchipped. In 2005, Congress, under the pretense of immigration control and the so-called war on terrorism, passed the REAL ID Act, under which it is projected by May 2008 you will be required to carry around a federal identification card, which includes on it a scannable barcode with your personal information. However, this barcode is only an intermediary step before the card is equipped with a VeriChip RFID tracking module, which will use radio frequencies to track your every move on the planet. If this sounds foreign to you, please note that the RFID tracking chip is already in all new American passports. And the final step is the implanted chip, which many people have already been manipulated into accepting under different pretenses.
We have a Florida family who are really pioneers in a brave new world. They have volunteered to be the first ever to have microchip identification devices implanted into their bodies.
After 9/11, I was really concerned with the security of my family.
I wouldn't mind having something planted permanently in my arm that would identify me.
In the end, everybody will be locked into a monitored control grid where every single action you perform is documented. And if you get out of line, they can just turn off your chip, for at that point in time, every single aspect of society will revolve around interactions with the chips. This is the picture that is painted for the future if you open your eyes to see it. A centralized one-world economy where everyone's moves and everyone's transactions are tracked and monitored, all rights removed. The most incredible aspect of all, these totalitarian elements will not be forced upon the people. The people will demand them.
Therefore, the social manipulation of society through the generation of fear and division has completely detached humans from their sense of power and reality, a process which has been going on for centuries, if not millennia. Religion, patriotism, race, wealth, class, and every other form of arbitrary, separatist identification, and thus conceit, has served to create a controlled population, utterly malleable in the hands of the few. Divide and conquer is the motto, and as long as people continue to see themselves as separate from everything else, they lend themselves to being completely enslaved. The men behind the curtain know this, and they also know that if people ever realize the truth of their relationship to nature and the truth of their personal power, the entire manufactured zeitgeist they prey upon will collapse like a house of cards.
Islam, greetings, hotels and peace. We are within 30 days until Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Register today at www.summitofthemoors.com. www.summitofthemoors.com. This is free, a continuation from the January Summit, where economic security is our forefront, our topic, our application, and execution. Be there August 16th through the 18th at www.summitofthemoors.com.
Gonna get easier.
Keep it on.
Black Mason and Shriner, you don't have any secrets. It's the white Masons and Shriners that we're going to expose in a minute. Now listen to this. At least 9 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, James Monroe, John Jay, John Hancock, Paul Revere, John Paul Jones, and James Otis. Later on in 1870, out of Freemasonry came a higher order of Masons called the Shriners. Now the difference between Masons and Shriners is that to be a Shriner, you must be a Master Mason in good standing. Now those of you who don't know anything about this, just hold your seats. I'll get back to you in a second. A Shriner belongs to the ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the Mystic Shrine. Wait, what kind of language is that? And all their temples or mosques are named after cities like Mecca, Medina, Syria, Aleppo. These are all parts of the Muslim world. So Arabic is in their name to describe the nobles. And a noble is a hereditary class that has special social political status in a country or state. And all white Shriners have an exalted or noble political and social status in America and nations throughout the world. Now they talk about this mystic shrine, meaning that there's some mystery attached to the shrine itself. And what is a shrine? It's a sacred place of worship associated with a holy person or a holy event, a container for sacred relics such as the bones of a saint. The tomb of a holy place, person, or other revered figure. Well, who is the saint that is entombed in the shrine? Who is that holy person whose bones are in that shrine? It's not just the bones of an architect of King Solomon's temple. No, that's cheap stuff. What is entombed in the shrine are the bones of those who are connected to the originator, and with him are the architects of that which you call universe and all therein. Now, this holy person is now entombed in mystery, meaning that there's a secretive knowledge of that tomb that is only given to those who are master masons. These people are called Muslim shriners or Muslim sons. We get a question in our lesson, why does Muhammad make the devil study from 35 to 50 years before he can call himself a Muslim son and wear the greatest and only flag of the universe? Why must he add a sword on the upper part? Oh, yeah, there. But make it big, man. Let the people see what I'm talking about. Now, you have to remember, this question is put to us by Master Farad Muhammad. And if you notice, all the shrine of temples, you see that crescent? That star with a sword over it. You think they don't know Islam? Well, now, if you look at this sword is over it, meaning that any time that any shriner reveals the secret of what's in that tomb, they would pay with their lives. Well, what is the secret of the ancient Arabic order of the noble of the mystic shrine? It is you. It is your destiny. It is your future. It is your origin that has been kept a secret from you, but was known by the founding fathers of this country and known by the present day rulers. Now, I want you to listen good. Elijah Muhammad said, you are the direct descendants of God Himself. I'm going to say it again. You are the direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth. And you are the natural Khalifa of God Himself. Listen. It is Arabic they use, because Arabic is the original language of the Asiatic black man. This black man, direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth, and in him is the knowledge of how to build not a temple, but a new heaven and a new earth. They look at black people and know who we are. Yeah. This holy person was hit in the head by three ruffians. Jubila, Jubilo, and Jubilum. And when he was hit in the head, he was carried to the north country and buried in a shallow grave with a sprig of cassia coming up from the grave to let the world know that there's life down here. But who? Who can get up the man in the tomb? Nobody but one with a master grip. Nobody but one with a lion's paw. The Bible said there's a lion asleep in Judah. Who will wake him? No pussycat can wake up a lion. And this pussycat leadership will never wake the black man up. You're too weak in your efforts to free our people from the hand of the oppressor. This one is really a metaphor. It is an allegory. It is a fable that describes something that has happened to a real person. One who is a direct descendant and has in his DNA that potential of building a new heaven and a new earth. His name is Hiram Abiff. Hiram in Hebrew means a noble one. He was a noble. He was a holy person. And in the story, they put him to death and they buried him in the North Country, North America. He's buried here. But he can be revived. The secret of Hiram is the power of the enemy through the Freemasons and the Shriners to lock down the black man and make sure that he never rises. The Masons and the Shriners, the white ones, are like that stone that was at the tomb of Jesus to keep Jesus from rising. But an angel came and rolled the stone away. And when they looked, he had risen. Keeping the secret of who the black man is was the duty of every white Mason, not the black Mason or Shriner, because you were never told that the secret was all about you. The white Masons and Shriners have always known the secret from Europe to America. In Europe, a Freemason understands the degrees and what it is to be a master Mason. They know something of the African origin of civilization, the advancements in Egypt, and the great architectural genius of the black man. They learned all of that through their study of the original Bible, which had always been locked away among the aristocracy.
common people could not read the Bible. But the people rose up and wanted to know what was in that book. So King James commissioned a group of 47 scholars. Some believe included William Shakespeare, to rewrite the Bible and give it a diluted version so that the common people who did not know science would never be able to know the truth that was hidden under allegories, metaphors, figures of speech. Think about the wisdom of the people who adulterated or changed the Bible. Think about the language and its use of allegories with the imagery of animals, birds, and fish to describe another reality. All this is to hide what is really in the scriptures. These 47 scholars knew the sciences. They knew astronomy, they knew botany, biology, zoology, chemistry, physics. They knew these things because all of the scriptures are rooted in science. They used language that the little man could never unravel. But in their attempt to deceive the masses, they got themselves confused. And now they don't even know what the book means. It took the coming of God to unravel its meaning for us. Otherwise, to eat it, you'll be poisoned by it. You will think you know what you know not, and you will worship that of which you have no knowledge. Well,
okay, Moses. Now, we've dealt with the underbelly of the situation, and we've dealt with the beginning of part two. We're going to come back with part two a little bit later on, and we're going to get into the remainder of this. And what I would recommend that all Moors do that's listening to this broadcast, if you would listen to this over and over and over with pencil and paper in hand, so that you will be able to get all of the
information. Well, now you don't have to keep the secret anymore, Masons and Shriners, because the secret is out. That is why the Savior had to come. Without observation. The Bible says he kept these things from the wise and the prudent man, and he revealed it unto babes. Well, when Elijah Muhammad taught us the secret, then the Masons and the Shriners were set free from that sword. From that sword. But you are under another sword, which I want to talk to you about. So what is the function of the Masons and Shriners today, now that the secret that you were hiding is out? Here's your function. Your function is to help me build that which was in the nature of Hiram. He's free now, and your job is to help me build the kingdom of God on earth, and only then will you have a place in the kingdom. You are not under that sword anymore. You are under another sword, and if you don't help me deliver this people that you have sworn to keep down and build a world that all of us can live together in peace, then you will find yourself under the sword of the judgment of God. So wherever you are, if you're listening to me, it's time for you to step forward and help deliver this black man. You hold key positions all over America, in government, in business, in law, in medicine, in education, in finance, in trade, in commerce. And you have used that authority to keep the black man on the bottom of society. Now your job is to keep yourself from being destroyed by helping the black man to go up to fulfill our destiny. Well, if you're the Muslim son, who's your father? Who is the Muslim that you're the son of? And what should the son do to help the father? Before the Honorable Elijah Muhammad left, he said to me, quote, "You may sit in my seat as the father over the house in my absence." So I'll ask it again. What should you do to help the father that you are the son of? And if you help us, God will show you mercy. Now, we have a sheep that is lost in the house of Israel. But in his DNA, he's connected to the symbol of Freemasonry, the square and the compass. Square has four angles that are 90 degrees, and it allows you to lay a perfect foundation, laying the plumb to the line. And a circle with a compass gives you 360 degrees, and a square with four 90 degree angles gives you 360 degrees. So when you are the master of the square and the compass, you are the master of 360 degrees of knowledge, of which the enemy was only given 33 degrees. Now, if this is a horizontal, this is horizontal, dead level. If I raise my hand to 45 degrees, it's here. 90 is here. But if you're only at 33 degrees, this is where you are. You're just crawling around with your little childlike knowledge. No matter how great you think you are, the wisdom that is now manifesting itself above your head. And I must say respectfully to our ufologists, what you're looking at is the wisdom of the gods. See, what you are dealing with is the wisdom of man, and a little man at that. So when you marvel at what you see from that wheel, you're marveling at the wisdom of God, who is also a human being. The fez that the Shriners wear is the fez of the Moors. and the tassel on its top is tied down. It was not allowed to swing a full 360 degrees because they only had 33. Which means that as great as their civilization is, they are but 33 degrees up from a horizontal plane, which means they're still crawling. And that is why we today, under the wisdom of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, look at you and your wisdom as little babies. You've done well until you meet God. And those who are ignorant under 33 degrees, they think that you are the God because of your little contraptions. But let me tell you, that all the advancement that you have made in technology does not go beyond the 81 years since Master Farad Muhammad made his appearance in America. Now, without law that is rooted in truth and the eternal principles upon which the universe is founded, there can be no justice. So law is a fundamental, a precious foundation upon which the universe and all things are based. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that the first law of the universe is motion. If there is no motion, there is no time. So before you can do anything, you must put a thing that you wish to do in motion. He said the second law of the universe after motion is order. Whatever you bring into existence and put into motion, you must bring it into order, regulating its affair by means of law. The universe is a regulated thing. It is obedient to law. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that there is nothing in the universe perfectly round. So the planets are oblong. All fruits that are supposedly round are not quite circular, they're oblong. Your head takes the shape of the planet. It's not round, it's oblong. And because of the shape of it, when you put it in motion, there is a wobble, a natural wobble in the motion. Now, since there is a natural wobble in the motion of things, the only way you lengthen the life of the thing that you have put into motion is to decrease friction by means of that thing's obedience to law. For when friction is great, then friction interferes with motion, and the cessation of motion brings an end to the life of that thing. All right. Now, this NBA has been set into motion. Somebody has to bring it to order. And in order to bring it to order, there must be rules and laws that each of us who belong to the NBA must willingly submit ourselves to, obey, or comply with, to lessen friction.
For the greater the friction, we begin to interfere with motion. Or you tear up order first. And when you tear up order, you impede motion. Therefore, the death of the organism is on its way. Now, why are you saying this, Farrakhan? There's something about law that is of a divine origin, that only under law are two things that are not equal in size, appearance, or in function. Only under law can those two things be made equal. Now, what am I saying? I have a pen. May I borrow this, sir? This pen is black, and this is too. But one writes and one is written on. They are not equal in size or in weight. Right? The Constitution says that God, or the I think it's the Declaration of Independence, that God created what? All men equal. Wrong. God created all men equally. Not equal. Now, you all that study language, that's the way we win cases. I'm going to make my case tonight. Now, there is a difference between equally and equal. All men are created equal. Now here you have the verb to be, which cannot take an object. So what you have is a predicate adjective or a predicate nominative that is equal to what is on the other side. The verb to be is like an equal sign. What is on this side equals what is on that side. God created all men equal. Equally is an adverb. I think. Now, what is the difference? If God created all men equal, we wouldn't have to look at the Olympics. Because all swimmers would come in at the same time. And Brother Johnson would just have to settle for equal. But there is no such thing as equality in the universe. Listen now. From the tiniest insect to the far planets, they are not equal in size, in weight, in function. But what makes them all equal is law. These things are not equal, but if I drop them, I drop them into a law. And that law rendered things unequal, equal. That is how important law is. For without law that is administered properly, you get no equality and no justice in the society. Now, it is my contention that neither racism, sexism, or materialism in the head of law can administrate law where people feel that there is equality under that law. No racist can give justice. No sexist can give justice. No person affected by status and station and material wealth can give justice or even represent law as law should be represented. No, come on with it. All right, I'm going a little further now. God created men and women equally, meaning there is no person that has come on this earth that didn't have sperm mixed with ovum. That's equal. Even if it's a test tube, you had to have sperm and ovum and mix it. Equal. Equal. No, not equally. Now you're equal because the law of birth does not discriminate. The law of reproduction does not discriminate. If you want a child, there's something you got to do. And all of us got to do the same thing. Maybe longer, shorter, night or... Excuse me. If it don't fit, we must have quit. Now back to sanity. Our point is, if you notice, each of us take a certain process. We go through a certain evolutionary process to come into existence. Whether you're white, whether you're black, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you have learned parents or ignorant parents, you start from sperm mixed with ovum, you evolve to a clot, then an embryo, then a fetus, then you come forth complete but incomplete. Equal. He created you equally under, but you are equal under the law. You got it? Now, when you're born into the world, the Quran says we are birthed into the world knowing nothing. So you didn't come here with knowledge, neither did I come here with knowledge. We came here with an equal chance from God's viewpoint to do something. Huh? Now look, you're not birthed into the world in Spanish or in English or in Chinese. The first sound that you make, all of us made the same sound. You didn't cry in Spanish or Chinese or Hebrew or Arabic. We all made the same sound. So we spoke a universal language coming in, didn't we? Come on. And when you die, you don't die in Spanish or English or Russian. You all make the same sound going out. Universal language coming in, universal language going out. I spoke to a very powerful white fellow a few weeks ago, and he was so powerful, so rich, and he let me know from the very beginning of our conversation how powerful he was, that I couldn't get around him. And I waited, and then I said, sir, I said, no matter how rich and powerful you are, when it's time for you to leave here, neither your riches nor your power can keep you here 1 second beyond time. So really, how powerful are you? You give power to things that really don't have power by putting improper value on things. You value people with money. You value people with influence. But that is not real power.
Okay, Moors, we've come to the end of part one. And we will come back with part two, and we will get down into the situation involving the lawyers and the conclusion to the whole matter that we are dealing with here this evening involving money, lawyers, Freemasonry, and slavery. I would like to recommend that you all be back for part two of this broadcast because we have some very, very more revealing information that you're going to need to check out. And we do encourage that you raise your hand. If you got questions, comments, and stuff, we're going to do that in part two. And don't forget for my free articles, just hit me up, send me an email to hawker53@hotmail.com. And I will send the free articles that we have here for you. And they are important because when you get these articles, that gives you the basics of what is going on, why you are struggling and rushing and hustling and bustling and sweating on your job and can't seem to get ahead of you, staying in the same position over and over and over and over and over. This is telling you why this is happening and the solution to how to stop it from happening is on the horizon. Okay? So don't miss part two of this broadcast. We will be coming back for part two. And send me an email to hawker53@hotmail.com, and I will just say, Doctor, send me your free articles that you asked about, that you talked about, and I will send them to you. Okay? I've been your host, so Hawker Armani LB, and you all have a good week. Okay?
look at